Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, February 26th. I'm Ray Graff, and I like soup. It's simple. Yeah, put some water in a pot, you put some salt in, maybe some veggies, a little meat, you heat it up, you swirl it around, you chug it down. I understand that. Now, there may be a few fine points that I'm not discussing here, and to that end, we welcome Deanna Fox today to answer your questions about soup, maybe share a recipe. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. If you want to talk about soup, this is the show. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number for your soup calls is 800-348-2551. Deanna Fox here on a Food Friday after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Food Friday, and we welcome back our favorite, Deanna Fox. Deanna is a food and agriculture journalist and educator. Her work has appeared in the New York Times, Washington Post, USA Today, The Guardian, The Kitchen, Eater, The Times Union. Stories and videos can be found on foxonfood.com or Fox on Food on Facebook and Instagram. You know, Americans eat more than 10 billion bowls of soup every year. The earliest, according to the AP, the earliest archaeological evidence for the consumption of soup dates back to 6,000 BC. What was it? It was hippopotamus soup. Delicious. Now, according to the journal Science, scorched pottery found in China indicates soup could have been made as far back as 20,000 BC. And that is some old soup. If you have a question about soup, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Deanna Fox, welcome back.
Hello, how are you?
You know, I get jazzed up talking about, I love soup so much, I will occasionally just warm up some teriyaki sauce and get a spoon. That to me is just simple, delicious soup. And it's, you know, I know that you have some recipes on our website, some foofy things, but soup to me is simple and delicious. And as I said at the beginning of the show, it's not a mystery. It's something that even the primitives like myself understand. What is, well, first of all, let's go back here. Before we talk about soup, you have a cookbook and you didn't even tell me about it. What's going on?
Oh, it's not my cookbook. It's a project I'm working on. It's I'm working with the Shaker Heritage Society in Albany, over by the airport. And we're taking submissions for a heritage cookbook. We want to document the upstate New York, Massachusetts, Vermont, pretty much anywhere where the Shakers were, document our cultural culinary heritage. So if you're somebody, it doesn't matter what your heritage is or how long you've lived in the area or any of that, doesn't matter what kind of recipe it is. We just want to have a little piece of your own personal food heritage to include in the book. So if people just Google Shaker Heritage Society in Albany, they'll be able to find it. And we're looking for submissions. So I'm really excited because I love food history. I love food. I love reading through old recipe books. So I'm pretty excited to work on that project. I wish I had a recipe for hippopotamus soup.
You know, this gets to my first question. But first of all, how did you get involved in this project?
Oh, I think just being somebody that works in food and loves history. I'm a big history nerd. I went to college for history. So I have to take on projects like this to justify the $80,000 I graduated from, you know, grad school with. My parents feel a lot better at the end of the day when I can show them actually using those degrees. But yeah, it's such a cool project. I'm just so excited to be and I'm very, very honored to be part of it. So great. If anybody's interested, yeah, it doesn't matter what your own personal heritage is. We're looking for all sorts of recipes from, you know, a dip that you have at every family function, and not a dip like your dumb uncle, like an edible dip.
How do you know my family that well?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Or, you know, a favorite dessert, whatever, anything. we'd love a little story about it and the recipe itself. And I have been looking through the recipes, and man, they are so cool.
Well, presumably, then my family recipe for hippopotamus soup could be included in that. By the way, is there anything that you cannot put in soup?
I don't think so. I mean, hopefully our hippopotami on the endangered species list.
Yeah,
maybe
right.
We should stay away from any kind of endangered animal. But it's like the old recipe for elephant stew. Have you seen that?
No.
It's like an old joke that you find in all the old cookbooks, and it's like, you know, one elephant and water, add two rabbits for flavor.
there you go.
So
really, I mean, soup is, as I said at the beginning of the show, it goes back thousands of years, and it's such a simple and wonderful thing. And at this time of year, you know, you consume a lot of soup. What is the secret to making a great soup, Deanna Fox?
I think the secret to a great soup, so not all soups use broth. Some just use water. Some use a little bit of wine or beer, or some even use, like, brandy, some sort of fortified wine.
But
I think having, like, a really, really good broth or stock to start from is important. And you know, you can buy stuff. There's lots of great products that you can buy ready made. But you want to make sure you get something that's low sodium or unsalted, just so you can kind of control, because that's really where you go wrong with the soup, is you add too much salt. And then, you know, you can add a little water to balance it out if you want to, or a little bit of acid. So that's a trick. If you make something and it tastes too salty, you can add just a little bit of vinegar or a little bit of, like, lemon juice, something like that, to help balance out the salty flavor.
Does that cut the salt? I did not know that.
What's that?
An acid like that will cut the salt?
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Yeah. But really, making your own stock is very, very simple. And I just keep, an old bread bag. You can use anything, a container, a plastic bag, whatever. And just when you're chopping up carrots and you have the peels and the tops, or onion skins, garlic skins, the end of the celery, you know, wash anything free of dirt. But all of that stuff has a ton of flavor. And normally the skin of vegetables, or like alliums, like garlic and onion, have like a bittering agent, like a bitter compound in the skin.
Yeah.
And that has a lot of, flavoring agents in it that just add so much flavor. So basically what I do is, when that bag is full, I throw it into a stock pot. I add some whole peppercorns, like maybe more than 5, less than 10. And what else do I add? Maybe some whole cloves. Clove is actually like a really great flavor that people don't really think about. You think about it when you make like cookies or a spice cake, but it's actually got really warm flavor that is great for savory dishes. And maybe like a bay leaf or two. If you have some herbs you want to throw in, you can throw those in. But then just cover it with water.
Mm.
If I have like chicken bones or something like that, I'll add that into, or a ham bone. You know, old steak bones, if you want to make like a beef broth, those all work great. But anyway, you just throw in these scraps and you cover it with water, and you put the top on and you bring it up to a boil. And as soon as it comes to a boil, then you want to turn it down to a simmer. And, you know, you'll get like foam that comes up to the top. Some of the imperfections from the vegetables will come up, and you can skim those off if you want to. You might get some fat if you're using like a chicken bone. You just simmer it for a couple of hours. You know, I usually go for about 2 hours on a low simmer and strain it out, and you've got awesome, awesome stock. But don't add salt to your stock. Leave it unsalted and then taste as you go, and add a little bit of salt as you go. It's much, much easier to salt things at the end. And something that happens when you cook soup or stews is that the longer it cooks, the more steam evaporates off. So when you first add your water or your stock and you taste it and it tastes perfect,
right,
by the time the soup is done cooking and you taste it again, it's going to taste way too salty because all of the flavor is concentrated and you lost liquid. So always salt your soup at the end.
Deanna Fox is our guest. It's Soup Today on Vox Pop. And, you know, I think it was on our webpage for this show, but given my memory, it might have been something months ago. Did you put a recipe up for split pea with ham, which is like my favorite soup?
It did. Yeah, I think it is. I think I did give it.
Yeah.
Yes, I love it too. I think that people, split peas are like a lentil, kind of. They kind of have, and I put like half split peas and half lentils actually in mine when I make it. But they just break down and they get like so like lush and creamy. And if you can make it without ham, of course, you can make it a vegetarian version. And you can even make split pea soup that's vegan if you use olive oil instead of butter.
Ah.
And if you use vegetable stock instead of chicken stock. But I like to put a good old smoked ham hock in there when I'm cooking it. And that's where the salt comes. And then I yank that baby out and pull the meat off the bone and chop it up and add it back in. And it's so good, especially just to get you through winter, right?
Yeah.
It's just... But so good.
Let me ask you a question, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll get first to the email bag and then the phones. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpopwamc.org. You know, I've had this argument before with people. Can you freeze soup or can you not freeze soup?
Yeah, you definitely can. One thing you have to be careful of is if you have a cream-based soup.
Yeah.
So if you use a lot of milk or a little heavy cream, or you put in, usually cheese can hold, but like if you add sour cream or something like that, what happens is that when that freezes and then you warm it back up, the fat particles actually separate from the milk solids. So you get like a broken soup. You'll see it almost looks like curdled, or when you reheat it, you'll get those little white spots of like fat on top. And you can try to like whisk it back together, or you can take an immersion blender, or put it in a regular blender and try to, you know, liquefy it again. But if you want to freeze a soup that's like a cream based soup, just stop at the part before you add your dairy product and freeze it. And then when you want to reheat it, that's when you add in your dairy.
Genius. Deanna Fox is our guest. It's Soup Today on Food Friday. We'll take a quick break. 800-348-2551 if you have a soup question. I'll be right back. Soup Today on Food Friday. Deanna Fox is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the phone number, and the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. This one's from Greg. I recently discovered a soup recipe. Kale, chickpeas, chicken sausage. Oh, my gosh. Any advice on how to fine-tune that? I'm making it at home for the first time tonight and having it out the other day. That is from Greg.
Yeah. So you want to layer that soup. So you have to think about things. You have chicken sausage, chickpeas, and kale, right? Is that what it said?
Yeah.
So the chicken sausage is probably going to have a lot of fat in it that you're going to want to render off to build the base of your soup. So cook your sausage and let that fat develop. And then add your chickpeas. You want to use a chickpea that's already been soaked, or a canned chickpea that's been drained off, and add that. And then the kale is going to come in at the end. But I would, if it were me, I like the stems on kale. I like to keep the stems of my greens with the green. I just like that texture. So I usually rip the leafy part off the stem and then chop the stem up with my, you know, if I'm adding onion, I would definitely add an onion to that recipe. Maybe some carrot. Carrot's going to give it a little bit of sweetness. Mm. And then add the stems in if you're using like a whole thing of kale. And then towards the end, that's when you want to add in your leaf and, you know, shred that up and let that cook down. And the leafy part of the kale is going to seem like a lot of it, but then when it cooks down, it loses so much water. And that's important to remember too. So leafy things like that are going to kick off a lot of water. So be a little bit skimpy when you're adding in your broth or whatever else with your soup, so that you don't end up with too runny of a soup or too thin of a soup. And then my secret for almost every soup I make is I add just a tiny, tiny bit of cooking sherry, or like a dry sherry.
Ah.
And even if it's dry, it still, you know, is a a wine-based product. So it has a little bit of sweetness to it.
Yep.
And it just helps to balance out all the flavors. But a little sherry and probably like a little maybe lemon juice or maybe like a champagne vinegar.
Interesting.
Just to balance out all the flavors, but that would be really good. Some good cracked pepper. And then I'd probably shave some like pecorino or Parmesan over the top.
Mmm. Deanna Fox is our guest. It's soup today. This one is from Amber. And Amber writes, I'm looking to make a butternut squash soup. However, there seems to be two trains of thought, some sort of cream element or no cream. What's your thought?
I think I might have handed over to the lovely Jackie Orchard, the producer of the show, a butternut squash bisque recipe.
Ah.
So there might be one on the website right now. But I go no cream. I cook, I make a butternut squash bisque that's got the squash, some carrots, some chopped up apple, and peeled. I usually peel it.
Yeah.
And some warm spices like nutmeg and cinnamon, and I use a vegetable stock to make it, and cook it all down. And then I take my immersion blender. An immersion blender is like a stick blender that you actually put right in the pot, although you could just transfer this over to a blender and just blitz it and let it get creamy that way. And it's really, really creamy on its own because all of those ingredients have a lot of sugar and a lot of starch. So they mimic cream.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you wanted to, you could do like a little dollop of like creme fraiche or sour cream, like thinned, but a little bit of, I don't know, just probably water would be fine. Sour cream, just a drizzle over the top. And that's really nice. But I don't add, I grew up on a dairy farm. So anytime I have an opportunity to throw a little butter or cream into something, I always do. But for that one, I think you can get away with not using it.
Okay. And that recipe is up on the website. All the recipes you sent are at wamc.org/voxpop. And let's grab a couple of calls here. There are more emails to get to. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. The phone number is 800-348-2551. Peter in Barryville, is it? Where are you calling from, Peter?
Yes, I'm calling from Barryville.
Oh, not Barrytown. That's a different...
Not Barrytown.
Okay,
no,
all right.
I'm not an orphan.
All right, go ahead.
So I'm a vegetarian for health reasons. My daughter's a vegetarian for humanitarian reasons. My wife is neither. So when I make something like pea soup, I'll sneak like a smoked neck bone in there or something and extract it before I serve it to keep my daughter out of going to therapy for the rest of her life. So is there anything I can do to give my pea soup a better flavor without actually using smoked meat?
Yeah. So the thing that I would recommend is you can buy smoked salt. So you can buy salt that's actually been smoked in a variety of ways. Like Malden salt. Malden is like the English finishing salt, that it's a really big crystal. It kind of looks like a pyramid, and that has a lot of smoked flavor into it. There's also something called salish, S-A-L-I-S-H, and it's smoked over alderwood, and it gets like a almost like a black look to it. When I'm making something where I would normally add like bacon or something kind of salty and meaty, I use that instead, and you get a very similar flavor.
Okay.
But if you're looking for a smoked salt. But if you're looking for something like a texture, if you like the texture of meat, you know, you could throw in some potato, some raw potato, and like that's chopped pretty into a pretty fine dice in like the last 20 minutes of cooking that soup, and that will help give it a little bit more body. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Hey, thanks so much for that. I appreciate it.
Peter, thanks
for
the
call. You're welcome.
Deanna Fox joins us today, 800-348-2551. The number on this soup edition of Food Friday. Chris is in Housatonic. Chris, you're on.
Deanna, it's Chris calling Housatonic. When I go shopping, two questions. When I go shopping, I don't see fish chowder on the markets anymore. And my second question is, could you make like a papaya soup?
Papaya soup.
Huh.
Interesting.
Well, those are two good questions. So the first one about the fish chowder, you know, actually was thinking about that earlier because it's a Lenten Friday. And so I'm like, maybe I should make fish soup tonight. But I don't know why people don't. The food journalist in me now needs to go write about that. But I think it's like a hard thing to keep. I think it's harder to keep it fresh versus like a chicken soup. But it's very, very easy to make. I don't know why people don't make it more. If you wanted to, you could make it a cream version or like a tomato based version, and it really does come together very quickly. You can make it in 30 minutes. As to a papaya soup, I've never heard of that, but if I were to make it, I would probably look up a couple of Thai inspired recipes, like from Thailand, because you get like a lot of papaya salads in Thailand. So I would probably use like, maybe it's got a little bit of peanut butter in it. It's probably got a little fish sauce in it. Definitely some cilantro, but I would try it. That sounds really good. You could also make like a cold papaya soup, like you would make a gazpacho.
Yeah. Well, Chris likes papaya. Yeah. He calls often about papaya. Chris, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Before we get to the next call, as a food journalist, you answer this one for me now. A homemade chicken soup, are there any studies scientifically that show any medical benefits? I swear, whenever you have a cold, homemade chicken soup works.
Yeah, there is actually a lot of research on that. And I won't, the phytonutritional benefits of chicken, I couldn't tell you, like, but there are some clear benefits about how chicken soup especially. But the thing that I think most researchers find is that just ingesting, like, warm liquid is really the thing that helps. So even if you don't have the noodle or the carrot or the actual chicken, if you're just taking that warm chicken broth, that helps. And when I'm sick, I actually add in, I'll just take my homemade chicken stock that I always have and throw in like a sliced jalapeno pepper
what does that
and
do?
some ginger and just let it, you know, kind of steep and warm up in there. And the ginger is good if you have a funny tummy. And the jalapeno is good if you're all stuffed up. It helps open you up.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. You know, when we do it when we're sick is we'll just put a little NyQuil right in the soup. It really
perfect.
Yeah, Rick and Warren. Rick, you're on.
Hi. Yes, I have a suggestion. I've been making pea soup and actually baked beans for years. And what I find with legumes and beans, in order to enhance the flavor to resemble perhaps ham or bacon in there, you need a sweetener, a small amount, but that's going to brighten the flavor, and you add that at the end. It needs some acidity, so a tasty apple cider vinegar is really important. Then it's going to be smoked paprika.
Okay.
And with those three, you're on your way.
So what kind of sweetener do you use when you make yours?
You know, I'm using like a big, I'm using, sometimes it's just brown sugar just to give that ham, you know, a glazed ham flavor, because usually you don't add a ham that's hasn't been brought to the table before. So it usually comes with a glazing on it anyway.
Right. Yeah, you make a good point because split pea is usually like a leftover solution, isn't it? You take the leftover Easter ham and make split pea soup.
Yeah.
So I like that thought.
But the legumes need a touch of vinegar to brighten the flavor. And I have a niece who's a carnivore, and she asked me to make my mother's Canadian baked beans without the salt pork, and I can match my mother's recipe going off of those three.
Awesome.
And salt, too. You do have to up the salt because ham brings salt, too. But obviously a different thing. But okay, thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Rick, thanks for the call. By the way, this note from our legal department here at WAMC, it's not okay to put NyQuil in your chicken soup when you're making it. It is not. It's not safe. That's a drug. Don't do that, boys and girls. This email from Emily says, when should you add fresh herbs to the soup? For example, fresh basil to tomato basil soup. Never sure if it would cook out or not. And that is from Emily.
Okay. So this is not an easy answer. I'll try to make it short, though.
Okay. We got time. So, go ahead.
So the thing that makes herbs taste good or spices too, is not so much the actual physical property of the herb. It's the essential oil in the leaf. So when you have a dried product, like we'll stay with basil. If you have dried basil, it's dried out. The oil is still in there, but it's going to take time for things to cook and for that leaf to open up and start to release its oils a little bit. So when you have fresh, you don't have to go through as lengthy of a process to pull the flavor and the oils out. But if you cook fresh, especially basil is called a soft-stemmed herb. So basil, cilantro, mint, parsley, those are all soft-stemmed herbs. And the stem tastes the same as the leaf versus a woody-stemmed herb like thyme or rosemary. The stem there doesn't taste like anything. It tastes like wood. It doesn't taste like the thing that it is.
Right.
So when you're trying to figure out when to add an herb, if it's a dried herb, you're going to want to add it towards the beginning of cooking. So when you start to, usually you're going to start with a fat, and then you're going to add in your aromatics like onion, celery, maybe peppers if you're using them, garlic, carrots, and you're going to let those cook for a little bit. And then you're going to add in your garlic if you're using that, or ginger if you're using that. And then you're going to add in your herbs, your dried herbs. And you want to kind of pinch them in your fingers and rub them to help break open those leaves a little bit and pull the oils out.
Yeah.
So do that. But then if you're doing fresh herbs really come in like the last 10 to 15 minutes of cooking. Or even with basil has a tendency to get like a soapy taste if it cooks for too long. So you're going to want to add it in maybe just before you pull it off the stove or as a garnish as you're serving it. And that's when you're going to get the best flavor. But if you're trying to figure out how to deal with ratios of fresh to dried herbs, the rule of thumb generally is that 1 teaspoon of a dried herb is the same as 1 tablespoon of a fresh herb. So hopefully that helps.
I did not know. That's a good fact to keep at the back of my mind. This email from Dorothy. Dorothy writes, I cooked up a pot of black beans and kept the cooking liquid. Any ideas for making a good soup using that?
I mean, yeah, you could make a black bean soup. So you can make any. So the flavor, it's going to have that kind of bean flavor to it. But it's also going to have a lot of starch. So you're not going to want to use it for some soup that you want to be very brothy. Mm-hmm. You're going to want to use it for something that you want a little bit thicker. So you can make like a chicken tortilla soup and add in the, you know, if you have any leftover black beans, you could toss those in and use the bean cooking liquid. You could make a potato soup would be really good. And you could add in some like pickled jalapeno at the end if you have that, just to give it some brightness. You could do like a roasted cauliflower soup would be really good with black beans. But any kind of cooking liquid that you're going to use, just make sure you taste it to see how much salt is in there, if you use any salt, just so that you don't end up with too salty a soup.
Deanna Fox is our guest. It's Soup Today. It is a Food Friday. We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question, 800-348-2551 is the number. Email voxpop@wamc.org. Home stretch straight ahead. Derek and the Dominoes for you here on a Food Friday. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number, and we're having great fun talking about soup. And I could talk about soup all day long. Deanna Fox joins us today. The number is 800-348-2551. Doreen writes in, and this is interesting. We were talking about papaya soup. Our regular correspondent, Chris, and who's a tonic, he really likes papaya. And it comes up often when he calls. And he asked, can you make papaya soup? Well, Doreen writes, loving this show, which, by the way, is the first time anyone's ever written that. Doreen writes, papaya soup with cilantro tastes great with lime juice. How about that?
Yeah. If you if you look up like a papaya salad recipe, those flavors are the flavors you're going to want to use in like a papaya soup. So, I think it could be really, I think that could be like a really nice, like cold summer soup. I think I might have to try that.
All right. And Doreen also writes, also, soups are a great way to add seaweeds into the diet to help boost the immune system. So there you go.
Perfect.
Have you done that, Deanna Fox?
I have used I've never put actual seaweed into a soup, but I do use a Japanese salt that is derived from seaweed. That's probably the closest I've gotten. Yeah.
Fair enough. This one is from Harold. And Harold says, can you use Blue Hubbard squash as an alternative to butternut squash in your bisque recipe?
Yes. It's going to take longer for it to break down. So Blue Hubbard's a little bit of a more fibrous squash than a butternut is.
Yeah.
But you can use it if you can get that thing apart. I think you might have to roast it first and then scoop it out and turn it into soup. Otherwise, I can't imagine peeling a Blue Hubbard like you would peel a butternut.
I've never even heard of that. All right, let's go back to the phones, 800-348-2551. Jesse and Troy. Jesse, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I make a lot of soups, and I generally function under the belief that the longer you cook it, the better. And I'm just wondering if that is, in fact, universally true, or are there some soups that benefit from a shorter cooking time?
That's a great question. I think that there are some soups that probably do not benefit from cooking a long time. Of course, if you cook anything for a long time, you want to cook it over low heat to prevent scorching the bottom or burning anything. But generally speaking, like most brothy, soups that are very brothy, probably you don't want to cook for as long. They might be something where individual components might cook for some length of time. We'll use the kale soup example from the first email. So maybe the sausage has been cooked already, or maybe the chickpeas have been soaked already. But when you put all those elements together, you don't want to cook them for too long because they'll actually cause all of those things to break down and lose their structure. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of end up with mush. Things where you're roasting, like a potato soup or a cauliflower soup or a squash bisque or the split pea, those can cook for a long time. You can really let them go for a long time. But then there's like the cousin of soup, which is stew. And stews generally benefit from like a long, slow cooking time because you're typically braising a meat that's like a very tough cut, something that's like a cheap cut. So the longer it cooks, the more tender it becomes. And then those things actually benefit from sitting in the fridge for a day and reheating so that all of the flavors come together. So I guess the general theory there would be if it's a thicker braised style soup, you can let it go for several hours. If it's something that's a little bit brothy and thinner, probably don't want to let it cook for too long.
Great. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Jesse, thanks a lot. 800-348-2551. The number, it's Soup Today with Deanna Fox. And Joe is in Springfield. Joe, you're up.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My daughter, Agatha, just turned two 2 months ago.
Oh,
and we want to introduce her to soup. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And we would like to avoid having soup everywhere as much as possible. Do you recommend using, like, I don't know, dipping biscuits in soup to introduce her to it? Or what's the best way to get a toddler into soup?
Dip her into the soup.
Make toddler soup? No, that's not it.
No.
For my kids are older now, but I remember those days very well. And I think bread. Having bread with soup is going to be great. And if it's something where she can, I mean, you could toast up croutons or something like that to put on top of soup, but just having like a piece of crusty bread that maybe you tear up into pieces for her and she can dunk it into the broth or the soup and eat it that way versus trying to eat it with a spoon, that might be better. I'm trying to think. You don't want to put anything hot into something that she would really sip.
Right.
So I would think start with like until she's really proficient with the spoon and can get it into her mouth easily. Maybe something like a thicker soup, something that's more like a stew with big soft vegetables in it that she can chew on might be good. But I'm sorry I don't have a better answer, but I am very happy to hear that you're so eager to get your kid into food. That
Joe,
makes me really happy.
Joe, let me tell you something. You can give up now. It's the messy years are ahead, brother. So just go with the flow. Take it from one who's got five. You're going to be swimming in the stuff. So just have fun.
Right. Do yourself a favor and get a dog so they can just lick up the mess. That's what I did.
All right, man. Hey, thanks a lot for the call. All right, take it easy. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Deanna Fox is our guest. It's Soup Today and Nancy in North Adams. Hello, Nancy.
Hello.
Hello.
Just a suggestion, instead of ham bone, because I live alone, so buy ham and there's just way too much ham, I buy smoked turkey parts, either the necks or the drumsticks, and simmer them and get the meat off, and it gives you that smoky flavor as well.
Yes, and I found that you can get them.
Not as fatty as ham.
Right, I found that you can get, so usually I get like smoked ham hocks, so it's just like the bone part of the ham at the grocery store or from a local butcher. And so you don't have to go through a whole ham just to get the one bone. But I found that in the past couple of years, like smoked turkey necks are easily found. I've been really surprised by that. So if somebody doesn't eat pork or red meat, you're right. Turkey's a great solution.
Yes, I can get necks, wings, and drumsticks. But I just wanted to share with you one of our favorite family recipes now for soup is dill pickle soup.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Dill pickle soup, Ray, and I'm going to make some and bring it to you when COVID's over because I've told you about this before.
I love dill pickles, but I don't know about dill pickle soup. That sounds crazy talk.
Oh, yes.
No?
It's to die for. But when I get sick of eating dill pickle soup, I add a little more cheese to it.
Yeah.
And I scramble up some hamburger, and we call it cheeseburger soup.
Oh,
and it's already got the pickles in it. You can go online and find the recipe. My niece found it online, and I was going to visit one day, and she said, I made pickle soup, so, you know, get here. So when I got there, there was a bowl sitting on the counter, and I said, is this mine? Did everybody else eat? She said, no, that's yours. I said, well, where's the rest of it? She said, I ate it already.
Oh.
Yeah.
She gave me a bowl and ate the rest of it. Yeah, it's that good, right?
It's good stuff, yeah.
I love the idea, Nancy. Great call. 800-348-2551. Deanna Fox is our guest. It's Soup Today. Layla in Mount Tremper. Layla, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I was pouring some pinto bean water down the drain this morning. I just simmered some pinto beans thinking, gosh, that would make such a great base for soup. But I had the impression that the constituents in bean water that give you gas would be in that water and you wouldn't want to reuse it.
Yeah.
So I was happy to hear what your comment about it because I felt like I was wasting something.
Well, she didn't really say it wouldn't give you gas, did you, Deanna?
No, but I live, you know, besides my children, it's just me and my children here. So when they're gone, I don't really care about things like that. But, you know, I mean, it's your personal preference. But I think that the bean itself is still going to give you gas, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think it's just the water. But
will cooking it help, though? Cooking it again? I mean, if you drink shots of this stuff, I assume you're going to get some issues. But if you cook it again, aren't you cooking out those things that, you know, cause
you might
the issues?
You might be concentrating them. Who knows? It could be double potency.
Well, I had the impression that, in fact, it was desirable to get it out in the water. But, you know, I could be wrong. I can look it up. Because I was thinking, gosh, this is a wonderful starchy kind of thing that you could start a good soup with.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to have to look into it.
Layla, thank you for asking a question I thought was too crass to ask on the program. And you know what? This is why you're a great caller. Thank you for calling.
Hey, I know you can handle it.
All right.
What I know.
Well,
so,
good luck.
Thank you.
Let us know how your experiments go, whether they are explosive or not. Rick in Del Mar. Rick, you're on.
Hey, Ray. Hey, Deanna. How you doing?
Hey, man.
Good. How are you?
Good. Love the show. Big fans. Tuesday with Rich Guthrie's and Food Fridays are our favorites by far.
Well, Rick, I know you, right? Do I know you from way back?
Yes, I call here and there.
Hey,
yep.
Great.
Big fan.
All right, great to have you here.
I retired, so I get to call all the time.
Okay.
And I live in Del Mar. So.
Okay, no.
Anyway, quick question. I'm calling. My wife is a real cook. She's a terrific cook, cooked her whole life. She and I have been debating or wondering, what is the deal with the bay leaf? What does it taste like? What are we supposed to be getting out of it?
Okay, so I get this question a lot, and bay leaves are interesting. The thing that makes a bay leaf taste like it doesn't really have a taste, the closest thing I can relate it to is like the tannins in tea. So if you drink like black tea and you get that like almost kind of bitter but very floral flavor, that's kind of like what a bay leaf does. So you don't really, like if you were just to steep bay leaves like in water and then try to drink that water, it would taste like maybe kind of grassy. But if you leave it out of the soup or the stock or whatever, you really do notice when it's gone. But that's
sure.
kind of
that's
the purpose
kind of the answer to the question. Yeah, my wife is a big fan of good tea, so that makes a lot of sense, and she'd understand that. So.
Yeah,
love the show.
All right, man.
Love reading your stuff in the Times Union. And
Thank you.
Up the good work. Enjoying the show. Have a good day.
All right, Rick. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, too. Thank you.
Hey, this email here is a good one, and this crossed my mind earlier today, and I forgot to bring it up. Lizzie in Sheffield writes, since we don't always have the time to make homemade soup and sometimes want the quick fix of a canned soup, what are some of your favorite ways to amp up a canned soup? What are your favorite canned soups to spice up a little bit?
Well, I will never be able to break my love for Campbell's tomato soup. That's like, you know, a top comfort food for me. So a lot of times I'll just make that, and I always make it with milk and not water, whole milk and not water. So it's nice and creamy.
Wow.
Yeah, I love it. But, you know, so I'll add like cheddar cheese to it after it's cooked into the bowl, or some croutons, but you can really just by taking, if you have leftovers in your fridge, and you can buy soups that are like, you know, they have all sorts of stuff in them, but condensed soups, you know, the bucket can kind, generally are like a great place to start. Like if you're craving a cream of mushroom soup, you can start there and then you can add to it. You can add in some fresh herbs. If you have a spice blend that you really like, you can add a little sprinkle of that into it. If you have leftover chicken or roasted vegetables, in the fridge, you can add that into the soup. You can get inventive with different kinds of crackers that you can add as an accoutrement. You can put a little sour cream at the end if you want to. There's all sorts of ways that you can doctor it up, but definitely don't be afraid to use like a store-bought product. There's no shame in that. Don't feel like, you know, you're making some big gas in the kitchen if you're starting with a store-bought processed product. It can still be homemade, you know?
Well, I got to tell you, Lizzie in Sheffield, her second paragraph here, talk about inventive. Here's what she writes. Also, my current favorite soup to make is chicken Caesar salad soup with garlic croutons.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, you cook lettuce? What is this? How are you going to do that?
I don't know. It could be just the flavors.
Oh, that's very cool.
You know, so like Caesar has... good Caesar, real Caesar has like anchovy paste in it.
Yeah.
So you might add, and I actually love cooking with anchovies and anchovy paste because it doesn't add like a fishy flavor. It just adds a really nice salty flavor.
Yep.
So you can start there, but you can cook with lettuce. Like people think that you can't cook lettuce, but you cook all sorts of greens all the time.
Cooked lettuce is very bad, Deanna. We have to disagree. It's terrible.
I don't know. It can get a little slimy. But if you cook it right, it's not so bad.
If you ever bring cooked lettuce to the show, you will be banned from the show forever. Just
I won't be a Hall of Famer anymore. Okay,
exactly.
So mental note, I got it.
All right.
But I would think the flavor, so it's probably got Parmesan cheese or some sort of hard cheese. It's probably got a little bit of maybe it's got anchovy in it, but it's definitely got some grilled chicken, some sort of chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and croutons at the end.
Lizzie wrote back, blend it after you cook it down. That's what she says you do. All right, well,
okay. We'll
hold off on the chicken Caesar salad soup for now and go to Joe in Albany. Joe, you're on.
Ray, I love jazz.
Yeah, man.
I'm a rookie cook. I want to do some soup in a crock pot. Here's what I have on hand. Celery, onion, carrots, apple, sweet potato, broth, and I have nutmeg and basil. Can I make it in a crock pot with those ingredients?
Yeah, I mean, minus the basil. I want to put the basil in with everything else that you listed, but everything else is okay. The base for a butternut squash soup. You got sweetness from the apple and the carrot. You got your, or did you say squash or did you say, I'm sorry, did you say squash or sweet potato?
Sweet potato.
Yeah, I mean, let's think here for a second.
I can leave it out?
No, don't leave it out. Sweet potato soup is great. Okay. I'm just thinking if it would be too sweet if you added the apple.
I see.
I don't think so. Put everything else together, but not the basil. But the one thing you need to know about a crock pot is that you don't get the same, when you make it on the stove, you get something that's called the Maillard effect. And what that does is it takes sugars, essentially, and some protein, and it turns them into like a carbon. It gives that good like browning taste.
Yeah.
And you don't really get that in a crock pot as much, but, you know, just let it cook put it on high for 2 hours or low for 4 hours. And then if you want to, you know, blend it afterwards, you can do that. But I think it will taste good.
Yeah, and throw on some Milt Jackson and the Modern Jazz Quartet and just cook it for a couple hours, sit back and relax. Frank at Niskayuna. Frank, you're on.
Hey, hi, guys. Great show. Thank you. I'm calling for my wife. She had a hint on how to get smoky flavor into soup. She uses Lapsang Souchong tea. And about a teaspoon, you rub it between your palms, put it in there, and yeah, it adds the smoke taste. Works
right.
Very well.
Because that's a smoked tea, so that makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, you can get it in most places, you know, in the specialty teas. So that's all I had to add. Great show. Thank you.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
This email, Deanna, from Charlie in Saratoga. Last winter, I tried keeping a perpetual stew going on my wood stove. Because I was going to leave the pot on heat for an extended period, I used a heavy cast iron Dutch oven. It started out good, but after a few days, it took on a sort of a metallic aftertaste. Do you have any tips for keeping a long-term stew going on a wood stove?
Well, I mean, you'd have to keep replenishing it with liquid because things will condense and you'll lose steam. So you'll have to keep adding, you know, water or stock, whatever you're using.
Yeah.
But the metallic taste could be, if it's a bare cast iron, it's not coated. So if it doesn't have like an enamel coating, if there's any kind of acidity in that soup, even just very, very trace amounts that naturally comes from vegetables, it will actually pull iron out of the cast iron and give it that metallic taste. So you have to be careful with that. But yeah, I mean, kind of sounds like a stone soup situation. Just keep adding liquid and you'll get there.
Deanna Fox, we're done here. How do people find you and keep up with you on the internet?
You can just go to foxonfood.com and you can sign up for the newsletter there. And otherwise, I'm on Facebook at Fox on Food, or you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Deanna N. Fox.
Well, you know what? Great job today. This might have been the most exciting soup program ever done on this station. we'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks, bud. Bye-bye.
Yep. Support comes from Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasoning, Sheffield, Massachusetts, specializing in black garlic and black garlic products with custom-made infused blends of sea salts and hot pepper blends, rollingrocksalt.com. Capital Roots, providing essential food services to seniors, families, and vulnerable populations during these challenging times, while also supporting small farms and local businesses, capitalroots.org. Field Goods, home delivery of fresh produce, meats, eggs, dairy, baked goods, small batch creations, and more from small farms and food makers, field-goods.com for local food delivery. And Pekarsky's, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, family-owned since 1948, offering sausages from kielbasa to Italian to bratwurst and smoked meats, home of New England farm-made sausage, open 7 days, Pekarsky's.com. Once again, thanks to Deanna Fox for joining us. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the great calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Barb King took the calls. Our producer's Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Have a splendid, safe weekend. We'll see you Monday.